Welcome to Two Book Minimum, the podcast that uploads so infrequently and irregularly, it's like the audio equivalent of putting on your winter coat for the first time in months and finding a $5 bill. I'm Monica Fumarolo. I am back. It has been a minute, and honestly, the thing that reminded me that it has been so long since I uploaded an episode was my credit card getting charged with my annual hosting fee. And since I just paid, I guess we're in for another year of episodes, however infrequent or sporadic they may be. And this time, I'm coming back and focusing on one of my favorite series really ever, The Lunar Chronicles by Marissa Meyer. I'm doing this slightly differently in that I'm going to be recording my thoughts in two parts. In this episode, you're going to hear me talk about books one and two in this series, but I'm not going to record all of my thoughts at once. I just reread book one, Cinder, within the last few months. And so since those thoughts are fresh, I am going to put them down now, and then I will jump into book two, read it, and record my thoughts then, and we'll put it all together, and hopefully it will make relative sense. So here we are. The Lunar Chronicles is a young adult series that came out with book one back in 2012. And it's so funny for me to think about this book and how long it has been part of my library origin story, because it's one of the first YA series that as a librarian I really got into. And actually, to find out what my original thoughts were, I couldn't just go to Goodreads to see when I first read it, because it was back in the time where you couldn't track rereads. So I definitely for sure read it when it first came out in 2012. And this was back when I was a baby little book blogger. I used to have a blog spot for a couple of years, and this was one of the first book blog contests I ever won. I won a giveaway, and I distinctly remember not being super interested in the book. Like, I thought the cover, I was like, I don't know, the description, I was like, I don't know if sci-fi is really my jam. But honestly, it came with a really fun steampunky necklace from Charming Charlie. If that doesn't make me sound ancient, I don't know what does. But I thought the necklace was pretty, so I entered and I won. And I was like, okay, let's give this a shot. And then I was hooked. This is a book I've read multiple times now over the past 13 years. And I would treat myself to rereading it whenever a new one came out. But let me pause and give you some context if you haven't heard of it or read it before. So it is a futuristic sci-fi with fairy tale origins. Cinder is the best mechanic in New Beijing, and for a very good reason. She is a cyborg. She is a girl who has many robotic parts. Her robotic status is evident because she has a robotic hand and leg. Given her condition, she is technically the property of her stepmother, but she makes the best of it, even though she is, by law, a second-class citizen. She adores the younger of her two stepsisters, Peony, and she passes her day running a booth in the marketplace with this quirky android who is also owned by her family, Aiko. It's a day like any other until two very big events happen to Cinder. The handsome prince, Kai, comes by her market stall and asks her to fix his android, and then not long after his visit, the whole market is forced to evacuate because another plague victim has been spotted. It's called Ludimosis. It is from the moon. And yes, we have a future society where all the countries of the world are getting along much better with each other, and the primary enemy or source of contention or strain is the moon, which is run under the iron fist of the queen. Definitely scratches that evil queen itch. And she has big plans for herself and what she wants to do with her humble nation. It is a reimagining of the fairy tale you have heard from your childhood or from Disney. It's definitely a retelling of Cinderella, but it puts this wonderful sci-fi twist on it, but in a way that it's not repellent. It's done in a way where it doesn't spook people who maybe are afraid or intimidated by how sci-fi can often come with a lot of lore, or you feel like you have to memorize an encyclopedia of knowledge or learn a new language, and what are they doing and what's going on. There are four main books, one prequel that is best read between books 3 and 4, which is actually when it came out. There's a short story collection, and there's 2 graphic novels. So you have a lot of story here to work with. And it is a book that me and the fellow middle school librarians in my area that I work with for our annual Battle of the Books situation, we have all loved it for a really long time and finally put it on our Battle of the Books list this year. Honestly, the reason we hesitated for so long was because of the cover art. The original covers are not like Twilight, but kind of like Twilight in that there is a consistent black, purple, white, and red motif going on, which is really strong and really great, except the first book is a high heel, and in the leg you can see that it's a robotic leg. So obviously it's making the allusion to Cinder and what happens with her robotic status, but also to the traditional Cinderella story and her like glass slipper situation. Honestly, we were afraid boys wouldn't want to read a book with a high heel on the cover. And then they did a redesign and they made the cover pink with this sort of manga inspired graphic illustration on it. And now the entire series, if you buy them in paperback or look the covers up online, each of the female protagonists is now very prominently on the cover, which also kind of honestly turns my male readers off. But we put it on the list, so some of them had to read it, and some of them actually really got into it. So who published this? Fievel and Friends, if you're listening, it's a great, I don't want to say gender neutral, it is a great series for all genders, but consider what teenage boys want to be seen holding in their hands, because it might not matter to you. You might want to say get over it, but like it matters to them and what their classmates see them reading. It's junior high. It's complicated. So only in the last round, I should say, of rereading book one, did I really appreciate the breadcrumbs that Marissa Meyer was delicately laying down for books 2, 3, and 4. There were characters and situations that I never really clocked before that they just seemed just like, oh, well, that's a line, that's a person, that's a background character, whatever. And then now, this time around, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so obvious. How did I miss it? Well, because hindsight is 20/20, and my memory is apparently not what it used to be. So that was something that skill I thought was fantastic. And even though this is shelved in my school's science fiction section, it definitely has fantasy vibes. So many of us grew up with the Disneyfication of fairy tales, so this feels familiar. And if nothing else, even if you're skeptical about science fiction, which I definitely was when I first read this a million years ago, the idea that you're finding things throughout the story and making the mental connections of like, oh, that's how they reimagined that aspect of the story, or oh, instead of doing this, she did that, and it was so just fun. It almost made it more like a Where's Waldo situation, like, oh, how is she gonna update this? This is, ignore what I said about the covers, the content of these books is perfect for the often ignored 11 to 14 year old set. It is a young adult book in the sense that the characters primarily are teenagers. You know, we've got our Katniss Everdeens, we've got our Beatrice from Divergent, we have the Percy Jacksons, you know, these young people who get thrust into extraordinary situations, because of course they are. But this book, this series, there is no swearing, there is no over-the-top violence, there are suggestions of romance, there are feels, because I mean, obviously so many of these princess stories do. But there is nothing suggestive or inappropriate that could easily become hot and heavy or the focus of the story in other authors' hands. There is adventure. There are high stakes. There is a huge focus on friendship and building your community and questioning who you can trust and feeling like you know the right thing, but is it the right thing? And making hard choices. There is characters who have agency. And it is fast-paced, and it doesn't talk down to readers. And I have said it for years, and I will be shouting this on the soapbox of my library until the day I die. Publishers, there is an audience here. And if you would highlight or direct more of your attention on this group, on this age group, you would not be disappointed. people often wonder why there's such a drop off in students reading for fun in the junior high years. But if you look at what the options are, or if you look at the professional review journals the way I do, week after week, month after month, how they will clump all of the quote unquote young readers together, or they'll put middle grade, which does not correspond with middle school, in one section of the review journal, and young adult together. And young adult tends to be grades 9 through 12. Fine. And then you've got the middle grade books, which tend to be grades 3 and 4 through 6. And then you've got the young readers. So do we not notice what are happening to our 7th and 8th graders? They get lost. They get, frankly, completely ignored. This kind of book is so incredibly appropriate for them, and it meets them at their reading level, and the characters are slightly older than they are, which is tending to be what younger readers want. They want characters they can look up to a little bit, that they're either on par, maybe slightly older. This book, Marissa Meyer, did this so well. And let's get back to our characters. Cinder, as our leading lady here, gives major Mia Thermopolis from The Princess Diaries vibes. She really just wants to be ordinary and honestly left alone, but fate has other plans for her. First with, you know, fixing the prince's android, but then to her involvement with Letimosis, and what information comes from that leads to bigger parts of her story. And it's not what she wanted, and it's not what she planned, and that's what makes it interesting. And her reluctance and her smarts are often at odds with each other, and it's just so fun because it's so authentically teenager. And then Kai, the prince, he is another great leading man, and I say man in quotes because he's really just a kid. He is fumbling and stumbling, and he's smart, but he's not yet wise. If it was a contemporary novel, he would be the captain of the football team who almost is like unwillingly elected to that position. He has what it takes, but he's still figuring things out, and he's endearing for it, and you're rooting for him the whole time because he wants to do the right thing by everybody, but someone's going to pay. Someone's going to lose. And his care, it's also so nice to see a male character who's not just a lug. Like, he is thoughtful and has emotions, and I think that's a great thing for our readers to see. And then finally, Aiko. Three cheers for Aiko, the sidekick android extraordinaire. She is the robot equivalent of Judy Greer. How she's this great Hollywood actress who the title of her memoir is I Don't Know Where You Know Me From. She is that. She is the comic relief, and she's funny, and she makes you, you know, it pulls at your heartstrings because it's like, it's a robot. So are her feelings real? And I attest that they are. So I love Cinder. I love revisiting this world, and especially in this last go around, picking up on so many of the things that I missed before, I'm very eager to jump into Scarlet, which is book 2 in the series, and see how many more of those threads are picked up and how many more details and fun things are laid down for the rest of the series. So that is book 1. We'll have a little intermission here. You can just skip on your podcast player, and when we come back, book 2. Hey folks, welcome back. It's been about a week since I did my recording on Cinder, and then I just finished reading Scarlet. So, oh my gosh, so many thoughts, and there are absolutely going to be spoilers ahead for Cinder, and frankly for this book too. So if you don't want to know things, hit pause, read a book, you'll love it, and then come back. Scarlet is the second book in the Lunar Chronicles. It came out a year after the first one, so this one was 2013, and it follows the story of Scarlett Benoit, a girl who lives in France with her grandmother. She has red hair, she wears a red hoodie, and she very quickly, at the beginning of the book, comes to know a street fighter who goes by the name of Wolf. At this same time, she's struggling with the fact that her grandmother has actually been missing from their small French town for a couple of weeks, and no one seems to be taking it too seriously. She's old. She has outlandish ideas that she has definitely instilled in her granddaughter. And Wolf, in an unexpected situation, decides to help her. He says that he knows things, that he can get to where her grandmother is. But in the same time, in other chapters, we still are following Cinder's story, who, as we know now from the end of book one, is not just Lin Cinder, New Beijing's best mechanic, but she is actually the missing lunar princess Celine, who was thought by almost the entire universe to be dead, it turns out. Nope, not dead. But she now has many, many questions, learning that Dr. Erland, who was helping her in book one, who was the royal doctor, is actually also a lunar himself. He gave her instructions to come find him in Africa, but she first has to break her way out of New Beijing's prison, escape being turned over to Lavanna and her clutches. And she does this accidentally bringing along Carswell Thorne, a renegade American soldier who has been missing in action, has a rap sheet almost as long as her fake hand, and the two of them are getting up to chaos in their own way while she's trying to figure out what the heck is real about her. What is her history on Earth? How on Earth is she a princess and she hasn't known this whole time? So you have Scarlett's story with Wolf going on at the same time as Cinder's. This whole book takes place probably over the course of a week. And it is, again, an action-packed adventure. There are, you know, rises and falls, and it continues to be a great story. So that's enough summary. Let's jump into thoughts. How on earth did I forget this is the book where readers meet Carswell Thorne? I so often associate him with another book in the series, but we meet him fairly quickly here in book two, and he is comedic and ridiculous and over the top and so incredibly cocky, and we don't really know yet if it's earned or not. Like, maybe it's deserved, or maybe he is just a guy who's good looking and is used to being able to charm his way out of situations, except certainly not all of them. Otherwise, he would not have been in the same New Beijing prison as Cinder. So he is a delight, and it was a wonderful surprise to meet him earlier in the series than I had expected to. Scarlett's story, on the other hand, is much darker than I remembered it from previous reads. I knew before that Wolf was a street fighter who we actually later learn is a lunar soldier. Both of these facts should have made it really obvious to me, like, oh yeah, violence is going to be a much bigger role in this plot. But it goes beyond just like the street fighting and Wolf defending the two of them as they make their way from Rieux to Paris to try to find her grandmother. But the events of the lunar soldiers, special ops, wreaking havoc on the world with the bloody massacre in major cities, in hatching essentially the first big part of Lavanna's plan to force Emperor Kai to give in to her demands to start gaining control of the Earth, because the moon is just not enough for her. Whereas book one is more about introduction, setting the stage for all these pieces, it's a very small story. I mean, it's taking place in one city with the outside influence of the lunar royal court, but you're not there. We're here. We are expanding. We are in New Beijing. We are in space. We are in Rieux. We are in Paris. We are getting this lift off. The conflict is growing. Cinder is the center of this international, intergalactic wanted list, but not everyone really knows that she's actually two people that people, the galaxy, would be interested in knowing. And then Scarlett is actually the one with the quote-unquote smaller quest, and how both girls are desperately trying to find the same woman and get answers to very different questions. Cinder wanting to know about her past and Scarlet wanting to know about her grandmother's past. Why could people possibly have interest in, you know, a quirky grandmother farmer in the middle of nowhere, France? Scarlet is a bit older. She has a shorter fuse. And it was one of those things where I couldn't decide, is it just that she has like inherited her grandmother's eccentricities? Or is it that more she is actually more self-assured? And maybe that is because she is more an adult. But I use that term loosely. Scarlet is 18. For a recap, Cinder is 16. Thorn is 20, whereas Wolf, the lunar soldier, is about 23. Kai, our Eastern Commonwealth Emperor, is 20. And Iko is timeless and amazing as a spaceship. I was so glad that for as much as there were some characters from book one who made small appearances or they didn't really have much to do in this story at all, like we don't see Dr. Erland at all, we instead still get Iko, despite her body being destroyed, as the temporary computer running Thorn stolen American spaceship. Like, she's hysterical. And again, it's a wonderful way to keep our cast together, to keep it growing, but also throwing in a new challenge into their situations. So Scarlet, I like that Marissa Meyer took the form of the book and wasn't afraid of changing things from book one. Obviously, you have to. There is so often a second book slump for readers in the sense that you have to keep things going from book one. You have to keep up the momentum, but you also understandably have to change things. If everything were the same, there wouldn't be any room for growth. And I do admire how she found a way to have a new focus of the story, but didn't abandon the characters and situations that she had set up in book one. So yeah, do you have less of Cinder? Yes. Was that a little bit of a, I don't want to say challenge for me, but a little hard for me because of the leading ladies in these stories. Cinder is the one I identified with the most. And so I liked her story. She's the one who got me into this in the first place. So I wish there were more of her, but of course I understand why there's not. And also, she's the center of this whole plot. So it's not like we have to worry about her being too far from the center of things. So I adored this. I also thought it was hysterical that when I was looking to read a copy, I still have. It's one of the few printed ARCs I have kept over the years was the printed one of Scarlet. Or I did own an e-copy. I bought it, but for my old Barnes & Noble Nook. So I had to go find that, then find the charging cord, give that a few hours to come back to life. And then it was just a different reading experience that I hadn't had in a while. Not that I don't use my Kindle constantly, but it was just different. So yeah, I still maintain that even with these characters' ages, and even with the events going on, this is still a great choice for the younger teen reader set and even like the older young adults. It really is a book that I feel so comfortable, in my professional opinion as a librarian, handing this to anywhere from 11-year-olds to 18-year-olds. And those of us who might still feel like teenagers at heart sometimes. Like, this is a series that continues to evolve and it doesn't shy away from things. It brings up these pretty big questions, but it does so in a way that is, again, accessible and not talking down to anyone. So those are my thoughts on books one and two of the Lunar Chronicles, Cinder and Scarlet. Again, I can't believe these books have been around for over a decade. They are lovely in that they stand the test of the time, partially due to their futuristic setting. May your to-read list never get shorter. Take care and happy reading.